Tokyo Podcast episode number 32.
Hey everybody, on today's show I'll be talking to Reverend Takafumi Kawakami, who is a Zen Buddhist priest in Kyoto, about the role Zen Buddhism plays in Japanese society. Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of Tokyo Podcast. I'm your host, Anthony Joe. And today is going to be a quick show because as soon as I finish recording here, I have to head to the airport and I'll be flying down to Fukuoka to do some filming for a Japanese company. I'm very excited about this as this will be my first time since I've arrived to do a bit of traveling within Japan, and I'm looking forward to heading down to the southern islands and seeing what it's like compared to Tokyo. I understand that Fukuoka is famous for its open-air food stands. Is that correct? I think they're called yatai. Is that right? It's funny that whenever I mention to Japanese people that I'm traveling to another city in Japan, they always tell me about the food that's popular at that new destination. So everyone has told me that Fukuoka is famous for these open-air food stands that you can find apparently everywhere. And I'm looking forward to seeing what it's like because, as you know, Bangkok is also very famous for its open-air food stands. And I had my certainly had my selection of favorites that I was always visit on my way home from work. So as soon as I'm done here, I'm heading to Haneda Airport and I'll be spending a week in Fukuoka. If you have any suggestions for what I should see down there, send me a message on Twitter at Tokyo Podcast. I'll be working most of the time, but I hope to be able to take some time off and explore the lovely city of Fukuoka. Before we get into today's main guest, I wanted to mention a new podcast that has recently started up. It is called Pedal Asia Podcast, and it's all about cycling in and around Asia. The hosts are Mr. Byron Kidd, who, if you remember, was featured on Tokyo Podcast episode number 20, where I talked to him about cycling here in Tokyo. And he has teamed up with Mr. Gavin Dixon, who is the co-host of the very popular Japan Show podcast. And together they are producing the Pedal Asia podcast, all about stories about cycling in and around Asia. So if you're interested in cycling in Asia, check out pedalasiapodcast.com. Today I am speaking with Reverend Takafumi Kawakami, who is the deputy head priest of the Shunkoin Temple in Kyoto. The temple has been in his family for generations, but Reverend Takafumi did not always intend to follow in his ancestors' footsteps to become a priest. That decision was made while he was in college in America, and he joins me today to talk about his decision to become a priest and also talk about the role that Zen Buddhism plays in Japanese society. Hi, Reverend. Welcome to Tokyo Podcast.
Hi, how are you? I'm glad to be here.
Glad to have you.
Yeah.
So can you tell me, for people who aren't too familiar with Zen Buddhism, kind of briefly, what is the role or the history of Zen Buddhism in Japan?
So Zen Buddhism is, it's a part of Buddhism. And then Zen is actually literally means seated meditation. So this, you know, Zen Buddhist sect focus on the seated meditation because once, you know, Buddhism became too academic around the 5th century in China, so then some group of priests started doubting, is that the way the Buddha enlightened? So, and they kind of think about, you know, how actually Buddha enlightened. So that's why they start doing the meditation more, and also they focus on more about daily experience. So that's actually a Zen Buddhism.
Can you explain a little bit more about what exactly meditation is? I think many people have seen it on TV, or if you've seen it at temples, it, you know, it looks like a bunch of people sitting there not doing a whole lot. what exactly are they doing, and what benefits does that offer?
Zen meditation, many people actually misunderstand this meditation itself. People think that this is like a mysticism, but it's not. So it's not like you're experiencing a mystic experience or anything like that. This is more like conditioning of your mind. So you can actually live in the moment. And it's kind of, you know, in the modern term, it should be more like a stress management.
Actually, I recently moved to Japan from Thailand, and in Thailand, we did a whole series with a British-born monk who lived in Thailand named Prat Pandit. And he talked a lot about that meditation allowed him to control the thoughts in his mind. And it wasn't some mystical spiritual thing where you're floating off the ground.
Yeah.
But like he said, it was kind of a time where he would try to focus his thoughts and quiet his mind down a little bit. Is that similar here in Japan?
You know, like many people, you know, Japan people say emptying your mind during the meditation. But, well, it's kind of a, technically, it's kind of, it's really difficult to do because I actually work with lots of neuroscientists occasionally and also psychologists. And also I have a psychology background in the college too. I actually more right now is, you know, interested in how brain works during the meditation. So I see lots of neuroscientific data. Actually, your brain activity really goes much higher when you're doing meditation. Actually, it's not like a resting. It's right, more okay. about digesting the information during the meditation. So, so maybe I should say, yeah, depending on how people see their, you know, meditation itself, because my point of view is more about scientific little bit. Because I like to have a balance.
Right.
And just not this religious textbook, but I want to have those scientific discoveries and also modern day approach. So I often talk about how brain works during the meditation in my class. That's how I teach.
And can you walk me through the process then? When you meditate or your students are meditating, what exactly are they doing?
Well, Zen meditation's case, especially Japanese Zen Buddhism case, focus on the breathing. But there's several different techniques, and the most common one in Japan is counting number technique. So, you know, when they inhale and exhale through their nose, they count number, usually 1 to 10 in their mind. But my case usually teach physical sensation technique, so slightly different, but this case here, just, you know, focus on the physical sensation. So when you inhale, and if you focus on the air, you know, breathing, you probably feel the cool air passing through your nostril. So focus on the sensation when you are inhaling, and then when you are exhaling, just breathe out through your nose and mouth either way, and just keep repeating this one during the meditation.
And what does that do to the mind?
Mind, or, well, sometimes people say that's case, you can just, you know, kind of isolate yourself from, you know, surrounding, and then you can actually deep into their mind. But actually, occasionally what I say, well, most of the case, you know, people take my class and they hear that this is like a science, more like a scientific data in a way. So when you just focus on really simple activity in the environment, which is really stable, safe, and a simple environment, you know, people start having less and less stimulation from the outside. So reason why is, you know, if it's same and it's safe, your brain doesn't need to process again and again.
Right.
So, you know, instead of doing that, brain tried to use the capacity to prepare for the new stimulation. But since, you know, meditation room, usually there's no drastic changes inside, so your brain started having less and less stimulation from outside. Then, but in the same time, your brain hate to be bored. So actually, brain is start using the information you already have and creating own stimulation. So that's why you start having random thoughts and random images. And some people say actually this activity is quite a similar one when you're doing when you are having REM sleep. Hmm. Then, you know, REM sleep, that's when you're having dream, and then dreams are not this crazy vision. Actually, it's an important firing process of your brain. So basically, when you're awake, you get so many different pieces of information. But when you are sleeping, especially when you're having REM sleep, your brain actually sorting out what's important information, what's not. And then only the important pieces of information brain stored as a long-term memory. So that's actually, it's really good for the stress management. So that's actually basically happening in your brain. I don't know if it's brain and mind the same, but that's like $1 million topic, you know, in a way.
That's something for Dr. Phil.
Oh, yeah.
So that's interesting because that's a little bit counter to what many people would think. Many people would think that you would meditate to, like you said, empty your mind.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you have all these thoughts, you should be trying to get rid of them so you can quiet your mind down,
mm-hmm.
or your brain down.
Yeah.
But what you're saying is that it's the opposite, is that during that time, it allows your brain to categorize and, uh-huh. and organize the thoughts that you've had during the day. Is that correct?
In a way, you're not really consciously doing it, but unconsciously, brain works that way. And then it's one of the stereotypes people have is, yeah, actually, when you do meditation or meditation-like activity, your brain activity goes much higher than normal time. And then people think that brain activity goes lower because in the beginning of meditation, normally you start processing less and less stimulation from outside. So that's why, but it's not how things work.
So then, what would you say are some of the health benefits of meditation?
Health benefit, obviously, I can say that's, you know, good for the stress management. So if you can do the meditation on a regular basis, that means you can keep your stress level lower. Then that's have a lot of benefit in mentally and physically, because if you think about the opposite situation, when you have an excessive amount of stress, your body starts releasing stress hormone that's weakening your immune system. Also, same time, when you have a lot of stress, your brain activity is slowed down. In a way, actually, your neurotransmitter activity is slowed down. So that's the case, you lose efficiency and accuracy in your daily life.
Right.
So that's both things. And then actually more like a simple level, when you are stressful, you get more aggressive and irritated. So that's kind of influence your social interaction with your friends, family, people around you.
Right.
So in a way, stress creates more stress.
Right.
Yeah.
And so meditation will help kind of your brain deal with that and
mm-hmm.
allow you to live a more stress-free life.
Yeah.
Now, can meditation be practiced anywhere? Does it have to be in a temple?
No, that's not what I'm teaching. It's more about, yeah, you can meditate any places. Any place you feel comfortable, like in your bedroom, bathroom, or even like your favorite coffee shop or park. You don't need to have a complete silence.
So if you don't have, if you don't have complete silence, what do you do then? You just try to focus more on your breathing or the counting?
Well, you know, what I mean here is complete silence. It's not like those, you know, if you go mental hospital, there's a padding room. That's actually complete silence. Right. But, you know, people have a comfortable amount of stimulation. So sometimes, you know, like you probably find people, you know, they who prefer to study in a coffee shop rather than study in a library.
Right.
Or people like to listen to some music during, you know, studying as well. So each individual have a different amount of stimulation which they feel comfortable. Like for instance, when you are in your room, if you feel comfortable there, even you feel hear the noise from the outside, but you know, it's so normal for you. That's comfortable to you in a way, you know. But if you are actually in the complete silence, actually, like yeah, I just said, a padded room. But if you are thrown into a padded room and it's like no stimulation at all because white wall and no sound from the outside, actually your brain goes nuts.
Is that what happens?
That's happened. So yeah, just you know, find any place comfortable. You know, a bathroom might be a good place, and also yeah, any place.
You know, if Japanese people could figure out how to meditate on the train, they'd probably be the most stress-free people in the world because they spend so much time on the train.
Exactly, yeah.
So for someone who's never tried meditation, how would you recommend they get started?
They can start from, you know, any seated, you know, comfortable seated position. They don't need to do the half lotus or lotus position as they see on TV or, you know, picture. Just, you know, sit down on their comfortable chair at home or any place they feel comfortable. And then maybe just close their eyes and then focus on the breathing. Or just focus on really simple stimulation, maybe like a sound of rain or bird tweeting outside, something like that. Any simple stimulation.
And for how long should they do that?
I'd say maybe from 5 minutes to up to like 20 minutes. That's good.
Wow. And is there any significance to the words that they say? Because sometimes, you know, when you go to a temple, you hear the monks chanting a certain mantra, I guess you'd call it. Is there any significance to that?
Not for the meditation. Actually, if you... Zen Buddhism case, we read Heart Sutra, such kind of things, but it's more about reminder to ourselves. So it's not like for the meditation. It's more about, you know, reading sutra, understanding sutra, and then, you know, reading sutra means we are reminding the context of sutra. So Heart Sutra basically talk about everything you see, everything you recognize here in this world is in your head. So, and also everything's impermanent. So that's what, you know, what we can learn from Heart Sutra. And then priest is supposed to know such a context, you know, when they are reading. So that's the idea. But other Buddhist sects, they keep chanting, but chanting also have a kind of, what should I say? Well, some like a meditation, you know, they keep repeating some mantra. So it's not Zen meditation, but you know, it's like just focusing on really simple things. So it's like the same thing as a focus on the breathing.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. So then that's something that it sounds rather easy and sounds like it offers a lot of benefit. But if you most people think about their daily lives, to find even 5 or 10 minutes just to sit quietly, it's probably not as easy as they think.
Not really.
But if people were to try it, you're saying that they would start to see results in their positive results in their life. Like a less stress.
Yeah. So I think most difficult thing for the people, not difficult thing, but I think many people actually kind of make a mistake because people look in the result during the meditation. Like they feel like, oh, after meditation, definitely just feel really comfortable or so refreshed, you know. They just looking for the instant result. But actually, this is like a long-term result. Because, you know, you got to do this on a regular basis. Otherwise, this one doesn't have any benefit. In a way, this is like a, maybe I should say, this is more like Eastern medicine versus Western medicine. So, so this is like more like prevention rather than cure.
Right, okay.
So many people make a mistake because when only time they do meditation is when they get stressed out.
Right, okay.
But this one here, you got to do this on a regular basis so you can actually prevent to have excessive amount of stress.
And for someone who practiced meditation for a long time, obviously they still have situations in their life where they're stressed out. How does that long-term meditation help them in that situation?
Well, I think in general, even you experience stressful event, your baseline is lower than people who's not doing meditation for long term. I think if you do meditation on a regular basis and then if you have a low like baseline stress level, you can actually much easily to deal with the actual stressful situation.
And you offer meditation classes through your temple, is that correct?
Yeah, I do. Yeah. Mostly, I should say daily, but occasionally I had to cancel classes because other temple event happened or I'm absent sometimes. So normally it's twice a day.
Okay. And one thing I'm very curious about is what role does the temple play in your Japanese community?
So that's also like big question right now because people kind of away from religion right now. Probably you asking like 10 Japanese people, just outside of your house, people say, "Oh, I'm not religious," and if you ask us, second question, if you have any amulet or lucky charm, and probably 90% of them, they have it.
Right.
So in a way, people kind of away from religion, but still kind of attached to some way in a superstitious way. I don't think that's right way with religion. Also, they see the temple as just a historical site. Hmm. But originally, temple is a place to learn. And then religion is not just about superstition or a funeral service or anything, just, ceremony. It's not like that. It's about, you can learn some hint to deal with everyday life.
So I noticed actually a few weeks ago, I went to Takao-san,
mm-hmm.
just outside Tokyo, and there was a temple there. And I did notice that they had this bell thingy that people could ring.
Mm-hmm.
There's a big lineup for people to ring this bell.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked some Japanese friends about it, and they said that people do it because maybe 50% kind of tradition or custom, and then the other 50% is kind of belief in good luck if they do it.
Mm-hmm.
So what you're saying is that in modern Japan now, people may not have a strong belief in, mm-hmm. in a specific religion.
No.
But kind of the belief in the rituals, say of having an amulet or ringing the bell, is quite strong.
It's like, like an insurance policy, like insurance. people say, "I'm not religious," but people are afraid of something bad happen. So they anyway just go to shrine or temple to pray. So that's kind of, I feel like that's why.
Right.
I think that's one came from just focus on the formality too much without knowing the reason. Then actually that's kind of thing started around 10th century in Japan already. So because back in time, sutra was in Sanskrit, and then nobody could read it except priest. And they saw the priest have a special power or knowledge. Then that kind of tradition kept going and going. And then even like today, I feel like people like do something unusual or religious, they get some special protection or something, but they don't really go deep into actual teaching.
Right. Okay. So they wear the amulet or they do some kind of ceremony,
mm-hmm.
and they feel that that's enough.
That's enough. To get some good luck or prevent bad luck.
Yeah. Right. Okay. Mm-hmm. And so then let me ask you then probably another $1 million question, but what role do you see the temple and Zen Buddhism playing in future Japanese society?
Future Japanese society,
can it be a place of learning again like it was in the past?
I think recently there are many like a Buddhist book published, and then they actually talking about more about how to live every day kind of thing going on. Also, like my class, I especially focus on how to use meditation and Buddhist teaching in everyday life. It's not about talking about, oh, this is a Buddha statue or this deity done such kind of thing or blah, blah, blah. I don't focus on mythology part at all. It's like any religion. I think going back to just deal with everyday life things, even a Christianity kind of same way, Muslim kind of same way, in the beginning was just, you know, just people thinking about how to deal with everyday problem. But when the religion became institutionalized, people said that adding, you know, deity and stuff, and they made it really complicated because they want to have authority.
Right.
So in the future, it's again, it's depending on, totally depending on, totally up to us. We have to go back to those original idea of religion, not just about, hey, we're going to do the funeral service. That's it. It's not like that way. We just need to really talk about, like, you know, speak out about everyday issue.
Right. It's interesting that if you could take the religion out of religion, you know, if you could take the spiritualness, the woo-woo-ness, mm-hmm. the fanaticism out of it, and just go back to the original teaching,
mm-hmm.
It might actually offer a lot of benefit to modern society today. But because it's so wrapped up in mythology, I think many people in modern society today turn away from it.
Exactly.
Which is kind of a shame.
Yeah, I mean, like a religious textbook or whatever, you know, the religious teaching, what we have today is, I think that's a collection of human experience, like a thousand years ago. And then what I think is people, you know, have the same issue today and 7 years ago. And like, you know, not about technology, those kind of things, but just like interpersonal, you know, relationship kind of things, or just how to deal with neighbors, such kind of thing.
Right.
People have the same issue, I guess.
I think people 1,000 years ago and people today have the same internal issues that, you know, they did years ago. You know, the same doubt, the same fear, the same anger, the same joy, those kinds of emotions. And I think that religion started originally to try to deal with those.
Exactly.
Because they were difficult to explain. They're, you know, to explain to your children or so they make a story. And then over the years that story has been taken and changed and corrupted and whatever till you have modern religion today. But it's, if you could go back to kind of the original point of the story, there's a lesson there that can be learned.
Totally. Yeah.
I'm curious, in your bio it mentions that you know, this temple's been in your family for 150 years, but you originally didn't think about becoming a priest. What made you change your mind?
It was really interesting in a way because I started studying psychology and economics in the United States because I thought that those two things are totally opposite to religion. Because before I went to the U.S., because I thought about religion kind of same way as most Japanese people think, all about rituals and also amulet. And so that's a totally like against like modern science. So I wanted to go like a more like modern science way. So I went to psychology, but then I guess around the same time 9/11 happened, and it's a new study field called religious conflict management. I was kind of curious about it. Then I took some class about religious study class, and I started taking it, and then really find out, you know, religion is not about just religion. It's about interaction between the religious sphere and the secular sphere. I mean, this is a part of human history. So if you can see the religion from a third person point of view, I can actually analyze religion better. So that's why I kind of decided to kind of follow my family step, because I just don't want to just stay in the academic side. Hmm. I wanted to have actual practice too. So
I bet your family was happy with that decision.
I hope so.
One thing I wanted to ask you was, you know, many times, like we talked about earlier, you know, people come to the temple or they turn to religion in times of struggle.
Mm-hmm.
There's that old saying from World War II, I believe, that there's no atheists in foxholes. So I'm curious as to what thoughts or advice that you can offer Japanese people in light of the 1 year anniversary of the earthquake.
Well, experience we had here in Japan is it's horrible. It's took a lot of people's, you know, lives and also changed the whole people's life at this point. But as a Zen priest, we should actually keep living the moment. And also, it kind of sounds harsh, but Buddhism case, we see every event is neutral. So event itself doesn't have any meaning. But in a way, you are the one creating the meaning here. Then, but it's really hard to separate the emotion and actual those practical things. But in a way, keep living the moment. They keep telling people about what they experience. And then talk about, you know, victims. Because just, you know, mourning for them, it really doesn't bring them alive again. I mean, talking about them for the future generation, that keeps them alive. Mm-hmm. So that's my kind of advice as a Zen priest. Keep living the moment and then don't struggle like, you know, oh, I've been doing so many good things, but why this happened? It's not why it's happened. And then just think about what's the best way for to or best way to honor your loved one. I think that the best way is just, you know, talk about them and talk about what you learn from them and then bringing that to the next generation.
I think that's something that many people deal with is that when some tragedy like this happens, we look at the unfairness of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm not a bad person. I work hard. I pay my taxes. I do all these things. And then suddenly my house is gone and my family is gone. But you're saying don't concentrate on the unfairness. Don't look at all the good you've done and suddenly this is bad. Mm-hmm. Instead, just concentrate on the moment of how you're going to deal with what's happening now.
So yeah, that's more about the Buddhist idea too. Sometimes people misunderstand the concept of karma because sometimes people think it's a reward and a punishment. Like if you do something good, good thing back to you, or if you do something bad, bad thing back to you. And they blame themselves about it. They can try to look for its unfairness, but also same time they blame themselves. You know, I've done something wrong, but it's not like that. Actually, just things happen more like physics way. It's called just cause and effect.
Right.
So you have to really accept that that's a reality in a way. Then you have to think about this moment, because this moment, whatever you do this moment, you are creating your past instantly. But same time, your action influence everything point after that. Not only your life, but everything. And this influence keeps changing forms and creating more influences. And so this focus on now really change their life in the future. Mm-hmm. Each moment count.
Right. Yeah, it's tough to do. And it's understandable when people, you know, especially if they're standing where their house used to be and suddenly everything is gone.
Exactly.
But you're right, is that the only thing you can control at that moment is what you choose to focus on. And what you focus on will determine what happens in your future.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of focusing on what happened in the past, focus instead on what you can do going forward.
Exactly.
Well, that's great. If people want to find out more about your temple, what's the website that they can go to?
There's a website called shunkoin.com.
Okay.
It's shunkoin.com. They can find out more information about my meditation classes here and also history of this temple. Also, they can find my Twitter account and also my email address. I often get a different question about Zen or Buddhism from different people, and usually advice from the, you know, by email, you know, maybe suggest some reading materials or how they can practice in the certain area, or usually I recommend some Zen center or something like that. So you can find out more information about this temple.
Okay, excellent. Well, thank you very much, Reverend. Appreciate you coming on the show.
Well, thank you. I'm glad. Yeah, hope I can see you in person.
For sure. Take care.
Right, take care. Bye.
Thanks again to Reverend Takafumi for coming on the show and giving us an insight into Zen Buddhism here in Japan. If you are interested in finding out more about his temple, visit his website at shunkoin.com, and you can find out all about the history of the temple and the classes, the meditation classes that he offers. If you are interested in cycling around Asia, visit the brand new Pedal Asia podcast put together by two avid cyclists here in Japan. Their website is pedalasia.com. And once again, I will link to both of those sites from my website at tokyopodcast.com. Don't forget that if you have any feedback or comments or you want to be featured on the show, you can visit my Facebook page at facebook.com/tokyopodcast or send me a message on Twitter at tokyopodcast as well. And if you are a photographer, feel free to follow me on Instagram. Obviously, it's Tokyo Podcast is my username. I've been taking a picture every day of my life in and around Tokyo. And so I'd love to see what kind of photos you are taking as well if you are on Instagram. So feel free to add me on there as well. That's it. Thanks for listening, everybody. I am off to Fukuoka now, and talk to you next week. Bye-bye.